On today's Focus on the Family, we'll investigate a paradox, and that is, often people get married to avoid loneliness, but many times, especially women, experience loneliness within that marriage, and we're going to talk about how that's possible and what you can do about it. Your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller, and Jim, to illustrate some of the emotion that many feel in regard to loneliness in marriage, we have these comments.
My husband, Ben, is into everything. He has a ball game or a meeting nearly every single night of the week. And then if he's home, he's on the phone talking over strategies for the next game or meeting. It's like he has time for everyone, except for me.
If friends were enough, I wouldn't have gotten married. I want my husband. I want him to be with me, to share my life on a daily basis.
I was in the grocery store checkout line, and the man in front of me, all he did was just glance back and smile. He looked so kind. I don't know what happened, but when I got back to my car, I burst into tears. I guess I finally had to admit how lonely I felt.
You can hear it in those descriptions, and to be in a marriage but to feel utter loneliness has to be a terrible place, and we want to talk about that today. It is amazing how many people identify with this situation. Psychology Today magazine said that 63% of the people who report feelings of loneliness are currently married. Mm. I mean, that's incredible. I even said to Jean, sometimes do you feel lonely in our marriage? I mean, that's a pretty daring question for a husband.
It is.
And she said, yeah. Mm. You know, sometimes you're busy and we don't get that time to talk and communicate emotionally. And I think every one of us can fall prey to the hectic pace of life and forget perhaps the most important people around us, and we want to talk about that today.
Well, we have some good news about, as I said, how you can deal with this in a proactive and a very positive way, thanks to our special guest here who's joined us today.
And Dr. David Clark, welcome back to Focus on the Family.
It is great to be here.
You know, there was another stat that caught my attention too, Dave, and that is 4 out of 5 Christian women say they experience that kind of loneliness. That's 80%. I mean, that's a big number. So the point of all that is it's not just the non-believing community that have these feelings of loneliness, but those of us that are Christians as well. What's happening at the macro level? What's happening in the big picture? Why such feelings of loneliness?
I think it's just the nature of the beast. Marriage breaks down over time. You have the initial infatuation that gets you married. We love each other. Everything you say is brilliant. I'm so connected. And then just the routines of life, children come along, the chores, the guy's building his career. Now, add to that, we don't know what we're doing to create intimacy. People don't have the skills. Breakdown of the family. Focus is fighting that, of course, what we're doing today. But the breakdown is so significant, people don't have the tools anymore. Guys have never had the tools.
And really the time, but you've written this book, Married But Lonely. I think that title, I mean, when I have, in preparation for the show, simply mentioned that to females, they get it. They connect with that title. I think us men are going, what? Of course we're not. No, we're married. Mm-hmm. There's two of us. What did you see happening that gave you the clarity, even for that title, Married But Lonely?
Well, these little stories we heard just a few minutes ago from these ladies, I've heard a million times at my seminars, in my therapy office. Oh, just one after the other. Good, solid Christian women. I am so lonely. I love my husband. He's a good guy. He's not in serious sin, and he loves me. But, and then they go into what these ladies have said. We're not together a lot. There's no real intimacy. I'm dying inside. And the key is, they're not letting the husband know that. The guy has no clue. He's perfectly happy. So when that woman hits the wall and leaves him, he's the most stunned guy on earth. Mm-hmm. Well, are you kidding me? We used to watch shows together on the couch. He doesn't get it. And by then, it's too late. I'm trying to catch these ladies sooner rather than later.
And in that definition, I mean, we really are talking about an epidemic, aren't we? When we say 60, 70, 80% of people are encountering anything, that's a lot of people. And what do we do? I mean, how do we equip men to be better listeners, better? And I got to ask you this question. Are we expecting too much out of men?
You know, I don't think so, and that's the good news. If a guy loves his wife and he has an IQ of over 100, most men do, he can learn. I had to learn. I'm a clinical psychologist. I didn't have a clue. 10 years into our marriage, the blonde is saying to me, I'm lonely. This isn't working.
Now, you refer to your wife as the blonde.
Yeah, she's
just so
the blonde.
People can
she's
catch
good
that.
With that.
She is great with that. been 25 years, she's never said it different, and she would tell me, believe me. 10 years in, you give me three wonderful kids, and one's coming, and we were just kind of losing it. Still loving each other, but not in love. So you have to get the man's attention. If the man gets attention, lead him through a series of steps, like I cover in the book, he will learn, he'll start to lead, everything will click.
Well, and you talk about, emphasizing good communication in marriage. You mentioned some of those things that detract from good communication, such as kids. Paint the picture in your counseling practice. What are the general themes that you see that prevent or at least get in the way of good communication?
We've got male-female differences, first of all. Guys clam up. We don't like to talk personally. We'll talk about sports, the lawnmower needs fixing, kid issues, career stuff. We don't want to get into the personal things. We're not made that way.
Well, that's okay, but arena. Why? Why are we made differently? What is preventing us from doing that?
I think it's just genetic. This is what God has done to us. Now, he's got a master plan, because if we work together and let the woman actually teach us, because she has many more skills interpersonally than we ever will have. She's got a PhD in emotional intimacy. And spiritual intimacy very often. We have like a third grade education. So we have to let the woman kind of guide us, teach us, and then we come together, we get it. I think it's just genetic. Plus, we're into control as men. When Sandy asks me a question and I feel a little pressured by her, I just clam up. Are you talking to me? This is my wife. I love her. I'd throw myself out of a bus for her, but I will not talk to her personally. Well, it's crazy. I've had to learn that's what she really needs.
How does a guy take that first step? I mean, you go home tonight and say, honey, I need to talk to you. And then you're stuck, like, because you don't know
what's
next.
That strikes fear into every guy listening's heart.
Exactly. Right. Oh, I tell guys, look, and I do this to this day. I've got a pad that I carry everywhere I go, in my car. I got three pads, in my car, at my office, at home. And I will write down things that happen to me during the day. If I don't do that, I got nothing. I come home without the pad, nothing to say. We have a couple talk time. I say, how was your day, honey? I don't know. I'm telling the God's truth. I don't know. I've forgotten. I have no memory. But if I have written a few things down, then I have a little bit of material. Guys can use their phones, electronic devices, whatever. I'm just a dinosaur. I use a pad. But Sandy wants to know, first of all, I thought about her. Dave's written some stuff down.
So that's what's being communicated there, the fact that right. You thought enough of her to write something down to talk about tonight.
Nice vibe. Even if it's, I bought batteries at the store for, on sale for $5. Okay, it's a start. But she knows I care about her, but I've gotten better at this. I know what she wants. She wants personal things, emotions, anger, frustration, memories that come into my mind. Guys, this happens to guys during the day, but it's just, it's gone if you don't jot it down.
Now, given the differentiation that we talked about between Christians and non-Christians, you would think that our walk with the Lord, our practices, our disciplines, reading scripture, understanding what the Lord has done in male and femaleness, we'd better understand this. But you're saying that basically there's no difference statistically about women, Christian or non-Christian, that feel lonely in their marriages. Why is that? It sounds like we utterly fail.
Oh, we are. And sad to say, many Christians and pastors, the Christian community, are on board with this problem and trying to get their attention. Because the wife is told, I see this in books all the time, and from pastors, from the pulpit, if you just love your husband, treat him well, meet his needs, then he's going to turn around and just love you back the way you really need to be loved. Absolutely false. He's a guy. He doesn't know how anyway. He doesn't know there's a problem. And if you keep loving him, he'll think everything's fine. Mm-hmm. He will never get it. You have to get the man's attention. You got to sit down and say, honey, I'm not happy in our marriage. Here's why. Let's change it.
But some women struggle because they're offended by that, if I could express that. I think that's fair, that if I've got to say it that bluntly, then he doesn't love me. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a catch-22. I mean, if that's how a guy is wired, but yet a woman is offended by the wiring, what is a couple to do? How are they going to break that impasse?
I say, ma'am, I hate to be the one to break this to you. You've married a man. He's sitting here, and this is what I'm the same. I'll say, I'm the same way. You think I'm sensitive? You think I'm kind? You think I'm naturally good at this? I'm not. I could bring my wife in. She's my secretary now. I can bring her in. She'd tell you. So you have to get women to speak up because they're not speaking up. When they finally speak up, it's, I'm leaving you. The divorce papers are coming. I'm done.
Which is
thousands.
Tragic.
It's awful.
Dave, talk about that. Play that through for us, though. Let's do a little role playing. And you counsel thousands of couples, so just pick one in your mind without naming them. But what does that look like? Rather than getting to the divorce court level, What could a woman say to her husband to get his attention? What can a man do to respond affirmatively? Play that discussion through for us.
The woman's got to tell the man, look, honey, I want to have a meeting with you in 3 days. It's about our marriage. It's going to be very serious. In fact, it's extremely serious. And I want the kids aren't going to be in the house when we have this meeting. And you set a time, and that will get his attention. A decent guy, it's like, wow, this is serious. If it's over dinner or if we're playing ball in the yard, he won't get the message. So we have that meeting, and at that meeting, that's when she dead across says, and she's got prayer support, and she's got people praying for her, and she might even read it. It's a very brief conversation. I'm not happy in this marriage. You're not meeting my needs. Frankly, we're both at fault here. I'm not throwing any stones. I've not made my needs clear. I'm doing that now. I have a book and I have a plan. Will you join me in changing this marriage? No, I love yous. No, gosh, you're a great guy, but I'm a little upset. See, men will only hear that and they won't change. You got to get a man with a shovel to the head, metaphorically speaking, of course. And my theory is, I've never seen this proven, a decent man who does love his wife, okay, he'll change. It'll be tough at first. I can't believe, I'm shocked, I don't know. But if this is what you're telling me, then I'll make these changes. And he'll join her in the process.
You define that as intimacy avoider, that most men, 85% of men, are IAs.
Yep.
What does that mean? I mean, you've touched on it, but how are John and I IAs?
Hey, wait a minute. We can talk about you.
Yeah, no, I want to
bring I didn't mean John. I'm just talking about you, Jim.
I'm calling Dina.
Look, I'm one. I think it's by nature. Genetically, we're made that way by God, and then by training and cultural education, that's the problem. Most young guys grow up in a home when they see their dad, and of course they model after their dad. He doesn't talk personally. He doesn't romance mom. He doesn't share anything. They never see him cry or break down or get personal. And so, hey, that's my guy. I'm going to be just like that. Well, you get married, and the woman doesn't realize it in infatuation and in dating because nobody knows what the heck's going on. We are just in love. Whoa, and then this is going to be fantastic. No, it's not going to be, because he doesn't know how to share. That's the only reason the woman is marrying him. I love you. There's physical chemistry here, but I want to know you. I want to share your life. I want you to talk to me. He's not going to do that. If she knew that, she'd never marry him. And
but
she's going to find out.
You're defining 85% of men, according to the surveys, that we have this intimacy avoidance gene or component. But how do we learn, because men can also move, and all of us as human beings, men or women, move to comfort. Comfort usually, I don't want to use the word laziness, I guess you would.
I probably would.
But we don't want to work hard. You know, we work hard out there. We work hard at our vocation. We'll put our extra time in. We'll do the extra report for the boss. We'll do that dinner that, man, I really don't want to do, but you know what? It could get me the promotion. We're willing to put in the time for those things. Yet in something this important, your very relationship with your spouse may be on the line. You know what? It's just so much work. Why do we think that way?
Well, that's a guy thing. We like to be good at certain things, and the guy knows I'm not good at this. This is not my arena, not my expertise. It's going to be embarrassing to me. I'm going to feel insecure, and so I'd just rather not. And so if the woman will kind of put up with it and tolerate it, and there's physical intimacy, and there's meals made, and we're together, I can really be in denial about how unhappy she is. That's why I think the woman has to be the one to break through. The guy's not going to get it. He will live 40 years, 50 years of marriage, die. He's in the graveyard. She's released, never having had intimacy, or she's going to divorce him or just stay miserable. So she's got to say, we have to make a change.
I've got to ask this question. It may sound a little out of place, but a lot of couples, particularly men, will say, oh, we talk all the time.
Right.
You know, we're talking all the time. They don't even know what you're talking about right now. What is intimate conversation sound like? I mean, yeah. We did talk about the mower. We did talk. Hey, we talked schedule. In fact, we talked about where the kids need to be tomorrow.
Yeah,
and
we're working on
drive
the
them there.
We're remodeling the bathroom or whatever. Exactly. That's not what the woman wants.
But tell us, what is it that she's looking for? What kind of conversation does she want?
She wants to talk about how you feel about her, how the marriage is going. These are just guys are running for the hills right now. Are you kidding me? How are we doing? Gosh, what could I do different in this marriage? How do you feel about me? I want emotions. I want you to talk about your day in such a way that you kind of guide me through it. Men don't talk that way. And let's say a close friend. We've been to 2 funerals in a week, and it's really been tough. And we love the people involved and very difficult and loved on the families. This has led to some great conversations for Sandy and I. our own mortality, people we know that are ill, our parents are struggling in some areas, we're talking. I've learned that. Now, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to do it. Mm-hmm. I would have said, you know, went to the funeral, that was tough, I'm done. Don't want to talk about that stuff.
Because we closed down.
Oh, totally. This is sensitive and nasty and difficult. I'd rather not. Sandy is really interested in talking about those issues, of course, being a woman. And so now we're so much closer because we've talked about those things. You can take any event. Funerals are a bit dramatic. Could be a wedding. Could be anywhere you go. You see a movie. You don't see a movie to see a movie. A guy thinks he sees a movie just to see the movie. No, dummy, moron. I'm the same way. You see the movie to talk with your wife about the movie afterward. That's the whole point.
In your book, Married But Lonely, you talk about a husband transformation strategy. Now, this is about like, for $19.99, you too can have a new husband. But the husband transformation strategy, what are you driving at there?
We've got to teach this man skills. First, we have to get his attention. I'm not happy. And the woman will admit, I'm part of the problem. I've not shared my needs. And so we go through a series of steps where she shares her needs very clearly. He reads chapters in the book. He only has to read three chapters in the book, 5, 6, and 7, about what God says to husbands. It's not even what the wife said, what God says about meeting a woman's needs. Well, God would know. He reads those chapters. He starts to realize, I'm falling short. Yes, you are. Let's work together on these issues. And so it just goes step by step by step. She's going to clean out her resentments because a woman who has a lot of resentments built up, even with a good man she loves, is not going to be able to accept his change, even if he does change. So we have to clean those resentments out. Not fun to do. I'm not the fun therapist. Anyway, so we move through that material, and then she forgives him, and then she's open. Plus, as she shares her resentments, and he talks with her through those things, he knows what her real issues are, because she's nailing it every time she talks about a resentment.
David, you must find a bit of humor when you read the scripture as a therapist, someone trained, and you come across, like in Proverbs, where it says, it's better to live on the corner of your roof than in the house with a contentious woman. That's the paraphrase that comes to mind. You're kind of describing what the person writing that proverb was talking about. It's this conflict. Man, I'd rather not be in this house. I'm going to go live on the roof.
Yeah,
that's odd, but do you laugh at some of those scriptures?
You know, I do, because I see it in my office every day of the week, Monday through Friday. And you're going to live with a contentious woman if she doesn't express her resentments, if she's not dead honest with you. All the resentments make a woman who's cold, who's mean, who's sarcastic, who will pay you back. Oh, it's and she doesn't want to, she's just going to. If she'll clean that out in a firm but gracious way, you're not kicking the door in going, all right, buddy, you and me, you are firm, you're loving, but you're gracious and respectful. You're not just mean and sarcastic about it.
Okay, let's give a little clue here. You talk about a man's density, you know, that they were dense generally. Give us some of the telltale signs of resentment. If your wife is doing X, then you're in trouble. Fill in the X.
You go to kiss her in the morning and you get the cheek. This is a clue. You come home and she's made the meal and you ask her to sit with you as many men do. Gosh, I'd like to watch a show with you, honey. Could you sit with me on the couch? She doesn't do so. She has other things to do. It will really hit you in the bedroom. Oh, that's where the man will really, even a dense man will start to realize. She will avoid intimacy. She will not be with you physically. She will, and when she is, she's absolutely not there. She will say things, even in public, that are kind of not out and out sarcastic and mean, but there's a tinge to it. There's an edge to it. She will really focus on the kids. She will spend very little time with you. I mean, this is what's happening. And it takes men maybe months, even years to figure it out. Because the man will go, well, I don't want to get it anyway. I don't know intimacy anyway. So I'll just go get wrapped up in my job or sports. And so they're just really pulling apart.
Is it ever too late for a couple to get on the right track?
Never, ever too late. I say that to every couple I see. I'm like a dog on a bone. Because one person wants divorce, one doesn't. I got to work on the one that doesn't, that wants divorce. No, this can change. If we know Jesus, if everybody in this room knows Jesus, and we do, right? Right? We'll get through.
Now, I've got to imagine that those folks feel hopeless. I mean, they've been arguing, perhaps like you said, for years. To say that, I hear it, but how do you take that first step? What are you going to do to begin to remedy this deficit that you've perhaps had for years in your relationship?
Now, Dr. Clark always has a plan, and it begins. And so people will know that I'm going to take you through a series of steps, maybe drag you through, and you have to do it my way or I won't see you. But we'll start with prayer right there in my office. Now, we know God here. We're going to pray. I'm going to pray for you right now. I may even have them pray. We're going to right now give this to God, and we're going to ask him for his help. And I'll say, if God was here in this room, and he is, let's picture him sitting in this chair, what do you think he would say about your marriage? Well, they know what he'd say. He'd want us to, they hang their head, he'd want us to fix it. Yes, he would. Well, knowing that, let's ask for his help, and we start spiritually bonding right away. I have them start praying the first week together. They don't even talk, let alone praying. Mm-hmm. I don't care if the prayer is as simple as, dear God, our marriage is in trouble. I have no hope here, but I'm asking, would you help? Just that simple prayer is powerful, and it will give them hope. The slightest sliver of hope, tiniest sliver of hope can make all the difference.
When you look at our culture, this is a bigger question, but you see the stats that are so similar. I think the divorce rate is slightly lower in the Christian community, maybe by 10 points or something like that, not dramatically lower.
No.
But it does send a signal generally in the Christian community and the world that's watching. When our divorce rate is running 25, 30, 35%, there's a problem there because the world's not seeing our faith and our commitment to Christ play out. Do you appeal to that larger vision of the fact that, and I've said it very often, our marriages are a witness to the world?
Oh, by all means. On a micro level, when I talk to a couple, I say, now we're going to get through this. You're going to heal. It'll be a great testimony. Now, God wants you happy and for the sake of your kids anyway, serving in the church, glorifying him. But what he really wants, too, is for you to, other people that don't know Jesus, to be looking on and go, wow, how could this have happened? So, yes, I deal with that in the book, too. We've got to change this whole cultural swing. Satan is winning, and he's winning big. Christians now, they have no biblical reason. I'm unhappy, you haven't met my needs is not a biblical reason to get divorced. But women especially are walking away. And so I'm trying to stop that. They don't have to if the man would really change. But a lady will love a man with every ounce of her heart until she's finally, and not having honest, being honest about her needs, or I'm very unhappy, until the last day. And then when that last ounce is gone, boom, I call it hitting the wall. She's done. And you literally cannot, other than an act of God, get that woman back. She's through.
In fact, you know, the graying of divorce, as the media calls it, there's been many stories written about that, that once the kids are grown and on their way, couples are looking at each other thinking, there's nothing more that we have in common. Our kids are gone,
right,
and I'm done. And unfortunately, it's often women that are coming to that conclusion. So what you're saying is even backed up in what's happening in the culture today, statistically and through anecdotal stories. You hear a lot about Christian marriages, 30, 40 years that they've been married and they're ending. And I've even talked to Gene about that to say, you know, how desperate they must be. They don't have a lot of life left. I mean, not to be discouraging here, but maybe 15, 20 years of quality life left. And you're dumping what you've invested in for 30, 40, 50 years. It doesn't make sense to me. But is that loneliness so deep and so troubling that they're willing to leave at 60, 65 because they want something better?
I'm seeing more and more of that in my practice. We never used to lose those couples. Never. And now we're losing them by the scores in major churches, and it's so discouraging for the younger couples. The ripple effect is massive. And I think you're right. It's so miserable that I would rather live alone, break my kids' hearts, shatter my grandkids' hearts. I don't care. I'm so unhappy. I've got to go for the brass ring. I'd rather live alone. Some of these folks will find other partners, but many won't even remarry, but they're good with that. Well, that's tragic. My point is, and God's point is, really, hopefully, I think it's my point, hopefully it's his point too. No, I don't want you to stay in misery. I want you to turn this boat around.
Dr. David Clark, author of the book Married But Lonely, we need to talk about the hope that is there. So let's come back, and next time, let's discuss the way through the woods, because we've touched on it today, but I really want to hit it more directly next time. Will you stay with us?
I'd love to.
I'm so thankful that you have such a plan here, based on God's Word, that can really turn those difficult and lonely times in marriage around. And we're really looking forward to hearing more of your insights next time. Our program was provided by Focus on the Family. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team here, thanks for listening in. I'm John Fuller.
It may be that this discussion has reminded you about some pain in your own relationship, or you know somebody who's going through a very, very hard time right now. Please contact us here at Focus on the Family. We have a counseling team here, and they'd be very happy to talk through some first steps that you can take towards resolving some of those issues and moving forward in a healthy way. The number here is 031-716-3300, or you can visit the counseling section on our website at safamily.co.za. When you get in touch, do ask about a copy of Dr. Clark's book, Married But Lonely, and you'll find that on our website too. It's easy to access this radio program on the website or as a podcast, so maybe pass that link along to someone who could really benefit from what we've shared here today. It's also Marriage Week here in South Africa, so I want to encourage you to engage in the content and activities around celebrating marriage, your marriage, this week. You'll find more on our website, and you can get directed to the SA Marriage Week website for more there. For Focus on the Family Africa, I'm Graham Schnell, inviting you to tune in for part two of this program tomorrow, when we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.